minutes ago, but they should be okay now. I just turned everything down. Today is Saturday, March 21st, 1998. I'm Robert Gonzalez, sitting with Joe Arredondo and his daughter, Evelyn Pedro. Mr. Arredondo, when we met last time, we covered quite a bit of information about your work. Today I've got some questions more about your family. So could you first tell me a little about your parents, their names, and a little about them?
My dad's name was Refugio, and he worked up there at the Sunrise Ranch, and he also worked for the Crams, and he was an irrigator. He irrigated all the time.
What about your mother?
My mother, she died at an early age. I think she was only in her 30s, wasn't she?
Do you know anything about, was your father born in the area?
In Mexico.
He was born in Mexico. Do you know where he was born?
I think it was Guadalajara, Huizeo.
Okay. And you were born here?
In Mentón.
Mentón, okay. In Mentón. When were you born?
1912. That makes me old enough to vote.
What are some of your earliest memories about?
Well, it was enjoyed working, but times was hard. When I graduated in 31 from Redland High School, I had a scholarship to go to college, but a job was worth more than a college then.
So you stayed here and worked?
Yeah, well, I ran a picking crew from, I started at the Crafton Mutual, and then that burned down, and then, then we went over to the Crafton Orange Growers, which was in Mentón, and then we had the braceros at that time.
Tell me a little bit about your brothers and sisters. Do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there was 6 boys and 3 girls.
Did all of your brothers work doing grove work?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The youngest one got killed in Korea.
Yeah, you started working. Did you start working with your dad when you were a child, or did you start working when you were in high school?
Well, I used to tag along with him and learn the operation, and then I worked, and then I also had trucks of my own. Between the, I made a good living.
What did you drove trucks?
Well, I had my own trucks and hauled oranges.
Okay.
Oranges and.
Did you haul for? Let's see. You said that you worked for Kraft. And did you haul for them, or did you haul for anybody?
Anybody.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How many people did you have working for you, or was it just you?
Well, we generally had, according to the pickers, that's the size of, I generally had about 16 pickers, and they would all pick over 100 boxes.
Really? 100 boxes? 100 boxes? Someone had mentioned once to me that the really good pickers could pick 100 boxes.
Mm-hmm.
About how long would it take to do that?
Well, about 8 hours.
So that was a full day, it was 100 boxes. Okay. About the time that you were doing this, when you were just out of high school, how much did the pickers make per box?
Per box? Oh, they'd, at the time, we had a schedule, and according to the grove, we had different prices. They'd pick 3 or 4 boxes to the tree, or they'd get a certain amount, and the more they cut it down. But See, on the braseros, I had good pickers. And every year I used to get the same picker, see? You treat them right, and they... And one of them used to pick 135 bucks.
That's fast picking.
Then he put in an order for a new truck, and I said, how is he going to pay for it? And we went to Los Angeles. That was during the war, you know. And I hated to ask him, how are you going to pay for it? So he got there and they told him, here's your truck. And come in so we can sign the contract. He said, no, Mayor, tell him I'm going to pay him cash. He had made that much money cash.
Well, they used to stash away, too. You know, they used to work hard, put it away, send it to the family in Mexico, and take care of themselves.
And then a lot of them went to the bars and spent it all.
Spent it all, yeah.
Did your father have any family that stayed in Mexico or went back to, came here and went back to Mexico?
Well, he had some nephews that used to come, you know, Pedro. But my grandfather, he went after and got my grandfather. He stayed here about 8 years.
So he went there and brought your grandfather back. Mm-hmm. When did he come out here?
I was still in high school, so it's been a long time.
Do you know when your father came to this area? What year about?
Well, Otelia was just a baby.
He was just a baby.
Yeah, that was about 80 some years ago.
Had to be about 80.
About 90.
90 years, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was your brother was came. So how many of your brothers and sisters were born in Mexico?
Just the oldest
sister and
the oldest too,
and
huh?
My brother. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did your father meet his wife there, or did he meet her here?
No.
How long did your father work in Citrus around here? How long was he out?
Well, all ever.
So it's
his whole life.
And then that would be, I don't know, what, 40, 50 years he was here?
Mm-hmm.
Also, was there any difference between the groves up in the Mentone area and the groves out over in Redlands? Oh, yeah. What were some of the differences?
The quality, the production.
Okay.
Even now, you know, I was one of the board of directors at East Island Packing House. And see, we had a brand, they called it the Cobuco label, and that was known all over the world. And when the Packing House went out of business, they was selling the label. They started at 4,000, and I told them to make it 5, and then Margaret Cram Wright bought it for 10,000. Then she kept it about 3 or 4 years. You know, they owned all of the East Islands.
Yeah.
Then she sold it to Dole for $100,000.
Jeez. someone.
Just a piece of paper,
yeah.
But the quality, you know, that quality is only good for Grafton, Green Spot, and East Island. The texture is a thin skin, you know, and that's what sells.
You work pretty much all phases of the industry. You work, mm-hmm. you work in irrigation. You ran picking crews. You drove trucks. What were some of the other jobs that you did?
Well, I'm also the waterman for all of Greenspot. I'm the secretary, the treasurer, and the waterman.
Wearing many hats.
I don't wear a tie, though.
Well, let's see. When you were working in, when you talked about the braseros a little bit, when you were working with the wrestlers when they first started the program in the early 40s.
Yeah, 42, 3. Yeah.
How many wrestlers were stationed around here at the Cone Camp?
Oh, that was about 2,500.
And how long were they usually there for?
Oh, they was there for about three or four years.
I've heard a lot of different accounts of Cone Camp, but I've only met a few people that actually ever went to Cone Camp, ever been there. What was your experience with the camp? What did it look like?
It used to be the prison camp, and it was set up for, and of course, at first, you know, it wasn't well organized. But after that, Max Garcia took over and he controlled it. The Bracero, they cut their own throat because they had all kinds of food, lunch meats and all kinds, but they wanted their tortillas and beans and all of that, so they finally gave them their beans and said, but they had it made there, but they wanted their...
Did you ever hear anything from the Braceros themselves about how they felt about the camp and about how the whole system was set up for them? Yeah. Did they complain very much?
No. Okay. No, after that, one of the Braceros took over and controlled it, but he was out to make money. He'd sell them anything that their own people, you know. There was on strike at one time, you know, and my crew, they used to walk clear over to Santa Ana and meet me there, and we'd be picking every day, and but they was rough, you know, they'd turn your truck over.
Wow. Speaking of strikes, I know in 1931, in fact, the year you graduated, there was an effort in Redlands, and I'm assuming it was in other areas, but there were some union organizers that came out and had meetings in Redlands.
Mm-hmm.
Were there ever any meetings in the Grafton area?
They used to go to the Grove even with the Braceros, you know, and try to convert them, but no, they told them that was private property, just to stay out of it. But I had a good crew and good workers. But see, at first, I started at 50 cents an hour. That's what a foreman used to get. And the picker, I think at the time they was getting 6 cents a box. See? And they pick 100 boxes, they'd be home. They had made their $6 already. And here I was working 10 hours, 12 hours to make my $6. See? So I told them to pay me by the box. He said, no, we can't do it because that's contract work. You have to carry your own compensation. I told him, yeah, I'll carry it. So then after that, they was paying me a cent a box then. Well, 1,500 boxes, I'll make $15.
Yeah.
So I'm the one that got him started to paying by the box.
The work week was usually Monday through Saturday for the pickers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would generally work. Were you involved with paying them, or did someone else pay?
No, everybody got paid through the packing house.
Oh, the packing house. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
At one time, I was doing the paying, you know, by contract. I used to pay them, but after that, the packing house used to pay them.
And how did the packing house know how to pay them?
Well, they had a schedule on the groves and see what we used to do, count the trees. They take an average of what they pick, and they had a schedule on so much box, 10, 12 cents, 15, and the size of the trees.
Well, I wish I would have brought it, and I kind of kicked myself for not bringing it because you probably could have helped me out. I've got copies of, and they're back from the teens, but I'm assuming they used them for a long time. They called them gang books, and what it looked like was a small notebook that the foreman would write the names of their crew, and how much they had picked. But there were a bunch of other symbols and letters that I didn't understand, so I couldn't make heads or tails about these things. Were you responsible for keeping all the records?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, you set is four tree sets. See? Yeah, there's a tree here, a tree there, a tree, a tree. And you throw the boxes here. See, each vicar picks four trees. And the truck goes between the drive. And then when they finish picking, see what box are there, you give them a chalk and they write their number. You from 1 to 15, whatever amount of crew you have. And then I jot down the amount of boxes and what they pick, see. And then you compare at the end of the day. But some of them try to put more than what they have, but you got it down on the...
with your regular crews, the ones that work with Cerros, Were most of them from the area?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did you see a lot particularly in the late 20s? I know you were still in high school, but you were picking. Was it mostly local guys that worked the girls back
then? Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, my dad picked oranges too. I think four pickers or five pickers they used to. That was on the horse and buggy, you know, they used to haul the oranges to the picking out with a team of horses.
So your dad worked for what house again?
That was for the ROGA here in Redlands.
ROGA, okay. All right. Was he a foreman then?
No, he was just
okay. I was trying to know that in 1917 they started using foreman. Mexican foreman up in Highland, and I was kind of curious to find anyone who might have known someone who worked around that time. Let's get off picking for a second. We can jump back to that. Now let's see. You live. Where do you live now?
In Greenspot.
Greenspot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Greenspot. And how long have you lived there?
Oh, about 12 years. More. See,
it has to be at least 20 years.
Another thing was, see, altogether, at one time, I had about 60 acres of orange.
Where?
Some in Redlands, East Islands, and Crafton, and Mentone.
Do you still have any of those groves? Or are they still in the development?
Just where I live, I got a little spot there, and but you know, temptation, that big money.
do it. Yeah, I know that's well, when you started buying your groves, what were you paying an acre for?
$2,000.
Okay, and when did you buy your first grove?
Well, the first one was on Wabash. Colon, 10 acres, $2,500.
And when you started selling it, if you don't mind asking, how much room were they offering you an acre for it?
Oh, 20.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm kind of curious. I've been reading a little bit about how much they were selling land for right here recently, so I was really very interested.
Well, this last one, you know, I had it on 5th, you know,
in the Crafton Hills area.
Mm-hmm. You know, going up to, well, I paid, what was it, 25? Probably. 25, and I sold it for 100 on a 10-year term, see. 10-year term, got 100,000 just in interest. And then he wanted more time, so the interest was more important than the money, so I gave him more time. Then I finally had to foreclose on him, and he came up with all the money.
That's great. That's, yeah, that's some very, very serious deals in land, the acreage around here.
But you can't do it anymore. You know, you could make money then, but the trouble was you've got to make sure you had enough to eat before you put anything on property.
Yeah. Now, as far as being a grower yourself, what were some of your responsibilities besides make sure it's planted and make sure you have a crew? Did you have any obligations to a packing house? What were?
Well, yeah, you sign up with a packing house, you're obligated to ship with them, you know.
Okay.
But see, on San Bernardino Avenue from church, clear up almost to University Street, I used to own all of that.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And I had 5 acres of grapefruit there, see. And at one time, I was tied up with a packing house, and a packing house from Riverside, you know, there was quite a few catch fires. And Evans, they came over and offered me so much a box on the tree. So I sold it. Sold it, and then the packing got after me. They said, "Don't you know the bylaws? You're going to be penalized for pulling out." I told them, "Yeah, I know the bylaws, but that doesn't apply to me. It applies to everybody. I get out of here, you know, too much." But, you know, se deja uno, and they run over you.
let's see. Did you hire your own crews for pruning, for any of that stuff, or was that all packing house?
No, just the picking.
Packing house just handled the picking.
Yeah, the picking, and of course the pruning you get your own or do it yourself or whatever. And but there's quite a few cash fires from Riverside, but you had to watch them, you know, because some of them, they had their crew, their own crew. They had their own trucks. So how are you going to know how much they picked? Mm-hmm. You got to be right there to
watch them really hard.
Mm-hmm.
About the pro rate. I've only had it explained to me once, and it was a long time ago. I never really understood what the pro rate was all about.
Well, the pro rate is to control the picking, see? If one packing house has, say, 200,000 boxes, and the other one has 50,000 boxes, see? This packing house, they pick according to the volume they have, see? That's a prorate to control the market.
Okay, all right. So
the bigger the house, they get more
share of it. And so, As far as an individual grower, would they say, "All right, we're going to pick your groves at this time," or you have to have your grove picked now, or would you make that decision as far as when it got picked and who got the oranges?
Well, you know, you can ask how's the prices, see?
Okay.
And they'll go with you, but around here you can't. My son Mark he bought some property up in Lindsay. Well, this year he made, on his Valencias, he made about $10,000. And around here, see, we only got about $2,500 for the same thing they get over there. Of course, up there, you know, you got competition. Here, there's only two left. And all they want is just get rid of the fruit. They don't work for the grower.
And so, again, what house were you growing? Not necessarily growing for, but what house did you sell your oranges to?
Well, I sold some to Woodhill here, and some to the East Island Citrus, which I was one of the board of directors there, and Grafton. At the time, you know, you could get good returns, but now you don't know whether you're going to get a check or a bill.
Bill, what's
a lot of times your fruit doesn't pay the expenses. They sent you a bill on top of your fruit.
Wow,
it's terrible.
Yeah,
it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a gamble. It really is.
Yeah.
And there's so many different factors. Well, let's talk a bit about some of those factors that can cause your crop. You have a problem with crops. Do you during like a serious freezes? Do you recall any really big freezes? Tell me a little about that.
Well, in what year was it? 37? It was cold up there at Green Spot. I think it was 19 and one quarter there. And we used to smudge day and night, just keep the pots burning during the day and night, and fill them in between. And even then, you couldn't save them. And of course, at the time, you know, there was more groves. One would help the other. But now you can't afford to smudge, because at $1 a gallon, you burn 8 gallons of fuel at night. And then you get a bill on top of the fruit, so it's just let them go. My grapefruit there at the house, they didn't even pick it. All the white grapefruit, they wasn't worth picking.
Was it because of the quality of the fruit, or they just didn't need the fruit?
Well, it's a demand people want, you know. If it's white, if it's black, they buy the black one, or purple, whatever. It's a people, the demand of the people, that's what sells.
I know that they don't use smudge pots anymore. They use
the wind machines. Or sprinklers now, huh?
Yeah, you can run water. You know, water will raise your temperature too.
Mm-hmm. When did they start you using the wind machines quite a bit?
Well, some of them had it. Well, there's certain areas, like up in Grafton along the Sankey, that's cold. Down here on Alabama, that's cold. But up in Green Spot, you hardly ever lose a crop. That's never gets cold.
What about rain? What effect does heavy rain have on the quality of your crops?
Well, it can harm the crops. You get a lot of rots, and there's a place up there, these bonanzas, you know,
clusters.
Mm-hmm.
Bonanza oranges are big clusters of oranges.
One cluster like that would have 100 oranges.
Wow, I've never seen you had some of those trees planted?
Yeah.
I've never seen a tree like
that. I got pictures of.
Yeah, I'd like to see those pictures. That'd be really neat to see that.
You have a newspaper. He was in the newspaper with the oranges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made that paper.
I know, from what I've read and the people I've talked to during the Depression years, it didn't seem to really have a real serious effect, at least this is what I understand, on the industry around here.
No, you take everybody that worked on a farm, you didn't know what depression was, you know. You didn't get paid much, but you had a steady income. And
So the work pretty much stayed stable because mm-hmm. the artists had to get paid.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there was, well, up there in the Mentone area, see, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 packing up just in Mentone. And here in Redlands, they had about 14, 15. And then East Island had the Gold Buckle, the East Island Citrus, and then the Cherokee and Blue Goose, and they had all kinds of packing. This was the main naval center of the world right here in Redding.
Yeah, that's what it's ever that's one thing that I'm hearing from everyone.
But you know what happened? If you don't make anything on the oranges, and you're offered 50, 60 thousand an acre, what are you going to do? Farm or take the money?
There's great choice there. Yeah,
that's what's happened. See?
Yeah.